From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View, your weekly update on cardiovascular education from the ACC.org. This week's view takes a deep dive into the use of a new class of glucose-lowering drugs that have had a marked impact on cardiovascular events. SGLT2 inhibitors are a class of prescription medications that are now FDA-approved to lower blood sugar in adults with type 2 diabetes. But they've also been found to lower cardiovascular risk. Additionally, ACC first presented information about blood pressure lowering from the SPRINT trial in the past. This was presented at the AHA meeting in 2015. Today, we'll also explore a recently published article in Circulation about a postdoc analysis from SPRINT, which reviews the status of intensive blood pressure lowering and its effect on left ventricular hypertrophy. In combination with this article, I'll tell you about the timeline for the release of the next hypertension guidelines from the ACC, which hopefully will answer some of the questions that we have about blood pressure control. So first, let's start with the general category of diabetes and cardiometabolic disease, and this new class of agents, the SGLT2 inhibitors. Mikhail Kosoborov presented the CVD-REAL study, lower rates of hospitalizations for heart failure, in new users of SGLT inhibitors at ACC 17. And this article was published in Circulation on May 18th of this year. This study was important. It showed that treatment with sodium glucose transporter 2 inhibitors, SGLT2I, was associated with a marked reduction in hospitalization for heart failure when compared to patients treated with other glucose-lowering drugs. We summarize this, I think, very nicely in a journal scan on ACC.org. This was a large real-world study across 6 countries. It was a non-parsimonious propensity-matched analysis in which patients treated with SGLT2 inhibitors were compared to a matched group in a broad population of type 2 diabetics, and the incidence of hospitalization for heart failure was collected from information from medical records. It included the United Kingdom, Germany, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, and the U.S. There were over 360,000 patients who were analyzed. Importantly, about 13% of them already had established cardiovascular disease, and 27% were thought to have microvascular disease. The primary endpoint of this study was hospitalization for heart failure, and it strongly favored the SGLT2 inhibitors. In fact, the hazard ratio, 0.61, means there was a 39% reduction in this endpoint. Also, there was a lower secondary endpoint, all-cause death, in each country with a hazard ratio of about 0.49. This is a very important study, and I think it illustrates the fact that as we get into a whole new world in terms of managing diabetes and cardiometabolic disease, especially as these drugs affect cardiovascular outcomes, cardiovascular specialists are going to have to be more and more comfortable both prescribing them and following patients with them. In a similar vein, a story was just published on ACC.org from the Diabetes and Cardiometabolic Diseases Clinical Collection, called Standards of Medical Care in Diabetes, and this is a set of recommendations for the management of diabetes and its complications. And I think the lessons here are very relevant to cardiovascular providers like you and I. I want to just review with you a couple of the recommendations that I think are particularly important for us to recall. First of all, it's obvious that the role of lifestyle, diet, and exercise is very important for effective management of diabetes. A couple of comments about diet. Clearly, dietary factors influence mealtime insulin dosing and blood glucose levels. And generally, a higher protein diet, 20 to 30%, and a low-carb diet can have salutary effects on fasting blood sugar, postprandial glucose, and insulin response. And this is important. There's no evidence that a low protein intake below the recommended daily allowance of 0.8 grams per kilogram per body weight delays reduction in renal function over time. So we really need to think about this in terms of proteins and carbs as we talk to our patients. Also, these recommendations from the American Diabetes Association recommend exercise at least 150 minutes a week of moderate to vigorous physical activity, or for individuals who would like to do vigorous physical activity, at least 75 minutes per week. The other part of the guideline, the recommendation of the new 2017 American Diabetes Association Standards of Medical Care in Diabetes, contains this notion that diabetics should get up every 30 minutes when they're involved in sedentary activity and walk around. This notion of longer sedentary time as being a risk factor is important not only in diabetes, but also other forms of cardiovascular disease. And I love the fact that they actually put that in. As you know, statins are first-line therapy in patients with diabetes. Generally, we want high-dose statins in patients who have diabetes and clinical atherosclerosis, or at least one additional risk factor. A mention about hypertension targets in diabetics. As you know, trials such as ACCORD and ADVANCE did not show that getting a more intensive blood pressure below 130 was of added benefit. So currently, the more intensive blood pressure targets are for selected subgroups, particularly patients that don't have a wide pulse pressure. The Diabetes Association guidelines on treatment recognize metformin as first-line therapy for blood pressure control, and they talk about the SGLT2 inhibitors and the glucagon-like peptide 1 inhibitors, receptor agonists, as having cardiovascular benefits, for sure. So that's a brief summary of some of the more important aspects of the new American Diabetes Association Standards of Medical Care and Diabetes recommendations that I thought you would be interested in this week. Finally, we have a nice survey of the novel diabetic drugs for the cardiovascular specialist that came out on the site just in the last week or two. And I want to give you just a couple of nuggets from that. First, you'll recall that sulfonylurea medications carry a black box warning by the FDA in our country, some evidence that they may increase cardiovascular event rates. Until recently, trials really favored metformin as the only diabetes drug that appeared to have cardiovascular benefit, but that's really changed now. And the SGLT2 inhibitors, one of them being empagliflozin, markedly reduced both heart failure hospitalization and, I mentioned, cardiovascular death. The glucagon-like peptide receptor agonists, GLP-1 agonists, like liraglutide and semaglutide, appear to reduce cardiovascular death and major adverse events, but more slowly, perhaps, than the SGLT2 inhibitors. And as ever, cardiovascular specialists need to be vigilant about screening for type 2 diabetes and looking for that in our patients. So that's, a nice brief review of some of the things that are happening in the management of cardiometabolic disease and, in particular, type 2 diabetes. Now I want to just briefly review for you some information about hypertension. You'll all recall that we covered the SPRINT trial very aggressively. It was released in November of 2015 at the AHA meeting. It compared the safety and efficacy of intensive lowering of systolic blood pressure to less than 120 milligrams versus a target treatment of less than 140 milligrams. It was a very large trial sponsored by the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute. And in non-diabetics, it did show that a lower blood pressure resulted in a significantly lower cardiovascular event rate in high-risk patients with hypertension. We felt the study was so important that on ACC.org, we created a whole SPRINT hub where we had experts weigh in on the pros and cons of intensive blood pressure lowering for various populations. Now, recently, the sub-study of the SPRINT trial was published. It's entitled The Effect of Intensive Blood Pressure Lowering on Left Ventricular Hypertrophy in Patients with Hypertension, and it was published by Solomon et al. And I just wanted to make a couple of comments about this particular paper. Now, you may remember in SPRINT, over 9,000 patients were randomized. They were over the age of 50. They could not have diabetes. Some of them, quite a large number of them, already had known hypertension. So the study was really about the target to treatment. how low will we take the blood pressure? Will we target less than 120 over 80, or will we look for something more like under 140? There were 3,000 plus women in the study. There were 2,500 patients with chronic kidney disease. Over 2,500 were over the age of 75, and nearly 2,000 of the patients had cardiovascular disease, and nearly 4,000 patients of minority status were participating in the study. And you'll recall that there was a 33% reduction in cardiovascular events and a 25% reduction in death. Now, this recent sub-study that was just published was really looking at the effect of the SPRINT randomization on left ventricular hypertrophy as defined by Cornell voltage criteria. There were about 7,500 patients in this study comparing intensive versus standard therapy. There was a 40% lowering of development of LVH by ECG in patients who were in the intensive arm. Also, interestingly, there was a significant lowering or reversal of LVH criteria by the intensive blood pressure treatment group. So it appears, and you would perhaps not be surprised by this, that the intensive blood pressure lowering seen in SPRINT also affected left ventricular hypertrophy as measured by LVH on electrocardiography. Clearly, this is not as sensitive as echocardiography, but I think it offers a glimpse of the potential value of blood pressure lowering targets and their long-term effect on LVH and presumably later both diastolic and systolic heart failure. Now, the good news for us is that we will be seeing the guidelines coming out probably this year on hypertension. Many societies are working on the guidelines, and I hope that they'll be released in 2017. On last week's podcast, I talked about the treatment of hypertension in heart failure, and the updated heart failure guidelines have recommended in appropriate patients that we target a blood pressure less than or equal to 130 over 80, and that was both for systolic heart failure and diastolic heart failure. You'll recall that for the diabetics, both in ACCORD and other studies, we don't have evidence that going super low adds value. And you'll also recall there is a J-curve with hypertension, and we have studies suggesting that if you get to a systolic less than 120 or a diastolic less than 60 to 70, especially in people with a wide pulse pressure, that these aggressive targets may have a downside, including syncope, falls, and also potentially cardiovascular events. So we're going to be looking forward to the new hypertension guidelines that will come out this year, and we'll cover them carefully here on the Eagle's Eye View podcast. So I want to thank you for listening to Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from acc.org. And we have a number of materials that will be added to this podcast that can be useful for you, including the studies that I've mentioned, the topic collections, etc. You can find us online for all of your educational needs, and I'll look forward to talking to you again next week. Thank you very much.